This is File 24, Cycle 3. Today's date is February 22nd, 2018. This is Jean McMillan. I am interviewing Cynthia Bianchi. She's going to talk about the beginnings of the Housatonic Youth Service Bureau and anything else she wants to talk about. But first, we'll start with the genealogical information. What is your name?
My name is Cynthia Bianchi.
And where? When were you born?
I was born October 7th, 1952, in Detroit, Michigan.
And your parents' names?
My mom's name was, or is, although she's deceased, Alessandrina Marie Bartoloni, before she married my father, who is Richard George Bianchi.
And do you have siblings?
I do. I have three siblings. My older sister is Sandra Fisher, Lori Bianchi, and my brother is another Richard, Ricky. Bianchi.
All right. How did you come to the area?
Well, my family moved here when I was 12. My father was employed in Detroit with K&E, Coyfell and Esser, and they had a plant here in Lakeville, and he was offered the position of plant manager. So we moved here again. I was 12, so that was probably in 64. We moved here in the summer. As you can imagine, it was quite a move. We had been living in Warren, Michigan, which was a suburb of Detroit, and we came to this beautiful area. We initially lived on Taconic Road, and it was just kind of a culture shock.
It would be.
A big culture shock.
It would be.
But it was great. It was awesome.
You had a very interesting first that K&E did.
That's right.
What was it?
Well, at that time, K&E was on Factory Pond, and across the street was the Lakeville Journal, and they had a huge Christmas tree, so that's where, I believe, the original Christmas holiday carol sing was, and K&E hosted the hot cocoa and cookies afterwards. So we did that for a number of years.
What a wonderful first.
No, it was great. I remember it vividly.
I checked the interview that I had done with Joseph Soper on K&E, and he had two paragraphs about how wonderful your father was.
I wanted to share that with you. That's very nice.
Now, I'm going to ask you about the Housatonic Youth Bureau because you were there at the beginning. How did it start?
Okay, well, it started, it started prior to my returning to the area. I had left the area for, probably about a decade. I had been living in California. I had a young son. I was a single parent, and I decided to come back in 1990. Unbeknownst to me, there had been a committee in the area that involved several very influential people in the area. Dick O'Connor, he was director of the Housatonic Mental Health Center. Dick Tabor, he was the minister of the Congregational Church. Val Bernadoni, he was at that time the superintendent of schools. Then there were other people also involved, and there was just a growing concern about the gaps in services for youth in our area. I mean, the schools were able to provide the supports that they could, but there seemed to be a rise in problems, issues with what they had identified at that time, that mostly the adolescents. Mm-hmm. There were stories about kids living in cars, increased alcohol use and abuse, and the schools felt, somewhat their hands were tied, and that they go home at 3 o'clock, and they're not there on the weekends or the summer. So it was actually Dick O'Connor who had found out that there were funds available for our area to establish what was called then and still is a youth service bureau. This is a statewide organization that is defined by the needs of each individual community. At the time, out of 169 towns in the state, 10 were currently not being served by a youth service bureau, and we happened to be 6 of those towns. Yep. So for me personally, it was just fortuitous that I came home when they were just really starting up. They had gotten a half-year grant from the State Department of Children and Families, and I heard about the job through my mother while I was traveling by car back east with my son. My father had flown out to drive home with us. And I'm not sure if my mom saw the ad in the Lakeville Journal or spoke to Dick Tabor, but I immediately called for an interview, and one thing led to another, and I was hired. So it was great. No. 91. I started in January of 1991. And it was, you know, there was a lot of work to be done initially, because in order to get the grant again for the new fiscal year, it was a matching grant. The towns needed to also show fiscal support based on the size of their population. So a brand new organization, we incorporated, Donald Warner was involved with that.
Was this before or after the needs assessment?
It was all kind of in conjunction. The needs assessment was one of the first things that I needed to do. And that involved going to all the town selectmen, the town social workers, the school principal, school counselors. We did a survey that went out to community members just to ask where people thought efforts could be given to help meet the needs of the kids. At the same time, needed to reapply for grants. So everything more or less happened at once, but by the end of June, we were able to submit a grant, and there was some clear-cut needs that were defined through the needs assessment, and it was to provide, as I said earlier, services for kids who were struggling in school, who had difficulties at home, and, you know, mm-hmm. where the school couldn't meet the needs within the school day or weekends or summertime. I mean, we were a year-round entity. Substance abuse was high on the list of concerns, and it really was a substance abuse of the parents. So we identified three areas that we would focus on initially, and those areas pretty much maintained their focus throughout my tenure of 19 years with the Youth Service Bureau.
And what were those three
areas? It was direct services to young people, youth and families. Initially, we began with teenagers, but
it's too late. It's too late.
It gradually, we started working in the schools as well. We had various programs to enhance kids' feelings of competency and self-esteem. We also provided, this was a second area, parent support. We had a number of parent support groups and education. We brought in speakers. We addressed issues that parents wanted to address, and our programs rotated through the town so that every area would be covered, or not covered, would be offered to every area. And then the third component of the Bureau was to serve as a coordinating body for our area. And what that meant, initially I had area service provider meetings. So all the nonprofit agencies, the town social workers, the schools were represented. We would meet once a month. It was not so necessarily individually child-focused, but it was more the issues, the general issues, concerns. That's where we got suggestions for different parenting programs to offer. And then at the same time, because of the way the Youth Service Bureau was designed or is designed, I was also able to attend regional meetings, regional advisory council to, at that time it was DCF, Department of Children and Families. I represented our Northwest Corner, which further helped to bring additional funds back to the coroner, not only for our agency, but for other agencies. I know for a while we advocated Dick O'Connor had a parent aid program, and we did a lot of work to increase those funds. And parent aids were run by his program, but it's where people would go into the homes and really give hands-on support to parents.
Who was on the early board?
Well, everyone that I mentioned who was part of the planning committee, and then we had Donald Warner, I did mention him before, mm-hmm. Roberta Willis, this was before she became state representative, but she was always very interested in all the social issues of our area. Ruth Epstein, Jean Wardell, and each town had to select a person to be their town representative. So some of the towns had their town social service agent, Jill Gibbons from Cornwall. I can't remember right off the top, but
that's fine. That's fine.
And then we had, I mean, by design, we wanted people who were familiar with the problems in the area. Many of our board members had children in the school system or in the high school, so it was a well represented community board. More or less grassroots with mm-hmm. support of the government.
Now, I'm assuming that the area covered, the six towns would be what we call Region 1.
Yes.
Okay. We didn't go into New York. We didn't go into Massachusetts.
No.
It was Region 1.
No. However, I will say, because our parenting programs became very popular, mm-hmm. we would never, ever turn people away. We had people from Millerton coming over. And there was a teeny bit of crossover.
But it was basically Region 1.
Mm-hmm.
Although you would accept anyone that was interested in the programs for their benefit.
Yes, yes.
And where was your first location?
My very first office, I was the sole employee was it right within the superintendent's office. I had a desk, a phone, and a phone book. But within, I think, 6 months, I moved over to what was called the White House, the Pupil Service Center, and that's where we remained throughout my tenure. The Youth Service Bureau now has a beautiful space in the, what do they call that, the athletic building.
It's on top of the garage.
By the football field, which is wonderful. They did a capital campaign. The person who replaced me, a very successful capital campaign.
I'm going to ask him about that when I get him.
Great.
He's on my list.
Great.
Now, who is referred to the Youth Service Bureau?
Well, people who would be referred, if it came through the school system, it would be young people that they felt it was beyond issues at home, mm-hmm. issues that the young person was dealing with. I mean, sometimes it's difficult for kids to talk within the school. That was more or less the beauty of our being close by. Mm-hmm. I would be able to meet with people or students during their study hall or after school. There were multiple times when issues, unfortunately, would arise at the close of school.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
And sometimes, again, sadly, that involved DCF. So we were there, you know, oftentimes waiting for DCF to come so that the child could be, or the young person could be interviewed by a caseworker at DCF if there were issues of
abuse.
Abuse, yes.
And you went to the schools. You went to the elementary schools.
Yes, yes. Okay. And we also had different programs for kids. Some of those were on the weekend. Some of those were within the high school. We started in what was called Empowering Young Women, and that was in conjunction with Women's Support Services. And that basically was offered every other week through the high school activity period. However, it developed a life of its own, and we would have activities for young women both in the evenings, over the summertime. So it, although it had its base at the high school, it was beyond the high school walls.
Other than referrals from school, did parents refer their children?
Absolutely. Parents would call, town social service agents would call, kids would call. I mean, older kids, obviously.
Really? That surprised me. Mm-hmm. That they would be concerned about themselves or their friends, mm-hmm. and they would self-referral.
Yes, yes. Well, teen years, everyone knows, can often be a difficult time.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
supposed to be the happiest time of your life. Well, well, it's not.
No.
And, you know, unfortunately, some kids just struggle with their personal identity, where they fit in. Maybe they weren't, you know, our area is wonderful with the sports, and
but it's
not
still
all
rural,
kids.
And there's a lot of isolation.
A lot of isolation. I always said that was a major risk factor because kids were cut off, parents were cut off. So
were they? I mean, did they just make a phone call and you would take
well,
their?
Well, it depends. Sometimes the school again was a great
filter.
Filter. Thank you. So they would go into the office and say they wanted to talk to me. So we would, you know, make arrangements. Either I'd come over there, bring them over away from. I mean, when anyone is dealing with a personal issue, you want to afford them the privacy,
yes.
confidentiality, mm-hmm. and that was extremely important to establish. So. I mean, teachers might know that there's an issue going on with a young person based on their performance, but
a lot of times when I was teaching sixth grade, and when I was teaching sixth grade, which would be in the 70s, and I was doing drugs, alcohol, and tobacco, and the kids usually walked, a lot of the kids walked to school, and they'd stay after and they'd talk to me,
mm-hmm.
which was very humbling because I was not certified for counseling or anything like that, but they trusted me enough that if they had an issue, they wanted to talk to somebody, and they would talk to me. And then I would try to focus or share the needs where it should go.
Right. No, I mean, I think it's a misconception that teens or kids, you know, preteens don't talk to adults. It's not true. They will talk to adults if they feel they're being listened and listened to and not judged.
Yeah, that's the thing that was coming across to me was that I'll talk to you because you're not going to judge me.
Right.
And that's very humbling.
Right.
To have an 11 or 12 year old come to you and say, I've got this problem, help me.
Right.
You know, and I would certainly try. But I wish that the Youth Service Bureau had been in existence when I was teaching because I had, unless you went directly to DCF, there wasn't you could take them to the mental health center, but it was very difficult to get a child and parent together to go there.
Right, right.
So it's a service that wasn't available when I was teaching. I am so glad that it's been developed, and it's needed. It's very much needed.
Well, and sometimes we would do outreach as well. I did participate in various communities within, especially the high school, where kids at risk were identified, and I would do outreach to them. I would somehow, you know, approach them at an appropriate time, see if there were things they wanted to talk about. And again, I mean, if kids trust you, they will talk.
Oh yes.
And then, you know, they knew that I was a mandated reporter, so if something serious, if there were allegations of abuse mm-hmm. or neglect going on, and I would always present it as a way to get their family the support that they needed as well.
And they knew you were there to help.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was the big thing. It
mm-hmm.
was, you were there to help. We had examples of neglect. We had examples of abuse. We had drug problems. We had alcohol problems. Even as low as sixth grade, it was coming down.
Right.
It was coming down.
Right. Right.
Not a lot, but it was there. And because of the fact that I was teaching science and I did the drugs, alcohol, and tobacco, I was more aware of it than perhaps some of the other teachers would have been.
Right.
And needed to report, needed help because I had no clue how to handle some of these things. So I wish the Bureau had been around then.
No, we also establish a prevention network, which I believe, and Nick, I'm sure, will speak to this too, continues today, and that was specifically to address the issues of teen substance use mm-hmm. and abuse, how to prevent it, what supports could be in place for parents. We would bring in speakers always around prom time. We would host events where the effects of underage drinking
mm-hmm.
or drinking and driving
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Were really highlighted. And at one point we had what was called the Safe Homes List, where parents committed to the community that they would not allow underage drinking
yep.
at their home. So, I mean, I know these issues persist today. Sadly, what was alcohol abuse and drug abuse also became an heroin issue.
An opioid,
In our area, and I know the community continues to provide programs.
The DARE program came in, which was alcohol
mm-hmm.
prevention. That came in the mid-80s, I think, because it was in the schools before I left. And that was something new.
Right,
that was something
right.
new, which
now,
was
in Adair, I know Mark Laurentano
mm-hmm.
ran it here in Salisbury,
yeah.
and that was good, too. I mean, it was something that was providing kids with education and information.
Mm-hmm. And it was a way to see a policeman in a different hat.
Exactly.
And, of course, we
exactly.
don't have a police department. We have a resident state trooper.
Right.
Which is altogether different than having a police department in town.
Right.
So
right.
that it was good both ways. It was good both ways.
We I should add, I mean, that you bring up a good point. We always had someone from Troop B sit on the board as well. Ray Augustine was on our board for a long time. Ralph Carpenter. So we really tried to cover all walks of life mm-hmm. in within the community to represent the board.
In the 19 years that you were with the Service Bureau, did you have a staff or were you all by yourself?
Well, initially I was by myself, and then gradually as we were able to get additional grant support, the Berkshire Taconic Foundation, the Health Foundation, I'm forgetting the name of it.
Northwest Community?
The Health Foundation, Nancy Heaton.
I don't know.
Dick Tabor was involved with that. Anyway, we got grant support, and we were able to expand our staff. I had a parent educator. I had someone who assisted with programming. We also tried to do fun things as well to increase interaction between parents and children. We had the FYI program, which Joe Bryan was hired to do programs, build a three-legged stool.
But it was with parents.
Yeah. So it wasn't all crisis-oriented. We did things to enhance communication and relationship between children and parents.
What were some of the other programs that you developed?
Well, we did, for a number of years, the Battle of the Bands. And again, this was somewhat atypical at the time, giving kids whose focus was on music an outlet to perform for their peers. It became a Battle of the Bands. It was a lot of fun. We had a similar program at Music Mountain where kids would perform at the end of the year. And they would come from all over. It wasn't like the school-based choral group, but kids who were pursuing things outside of school but needed an audience, needed a place to show what they were working on as well.
Did you have any pupils from the private schools, or was it just public?
Well, I have to say most of... I would say 95%
would be public.
I mean, for instance, Battle of the Bands, I mean, we did have kids participate in that. And some of the kids whose parents taught at the private schools, but they attended the public schools, we would provide they would participate in our services. We had a mother-daughter book club for a while, Empowering Young Women, as I spoke about. I mean, that really continued throughout, and I believe is still operational now. We had different community events. For 3 years, we did a Stand for Children rally, which mirrored the Stand for Children rally that was going on not only in Washington, D.C., but across the country. We had informational sessions for parents when Husky was first brought into the area.
What's Husky?
Husky was Medicaid, Title 19 for children, Husky program, helping families get health insurance for their children.
Okay. Now, you've partnered with the Women's Support Services and the Berkshire Taconic Community Foundation and DCF. Are there any other organizations that you partnered with?
Well, as I said, I was involved with various regional councils. I also sat on, we had our own suicide prevention network here, but I was part of a regional suicide prevention network. And if there happened to be an unfortunate suicide, we would go and provide support. Sadly, we had several tragic deaths in our own area, and
I had two suicides of children that I had, and they were both very tragic.
No, it's a horrible thing, but we would spearhead the counseling, and it was more just providing the space for students to be together at a time of deep tragedy.
But you have to be realistic. You can't shut your eyes and say, oh, not in this area.
Right.
It's here.
Right.
It's here.
It's everywhere.
And if you can do something to either ameliorate the effects or prevent, it's better than after the fact, oh, I'm so sorry, I wish I had. You know, and that's the value of the Youth Bureau, because it's proactive.
Well, and we would tell kids, if you know someone who's struggling, we don't even need to say, oh, Sally told me you're having a hard time, but don't not say something.
I'm not used to the high school level. It surprises me that there was the concern for others than oneself.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no, there definitely would be. There definitely would be. I mean, maybe that's the beauty of a small community.
I think it is. Because we do look after one another.
Excuse me.
How much does it cost to participate in the program?
Oh, absolutely zero.
That's what I wanted to bring up.
That was the design of the program from the get-go. The services would be free. That was part of the town's commitment. They paid, we were on their budget line each year to provide services to kids in each of the towns.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So they do support it.
They absolutely do support it. As the years progressed, that amount also increased. We always had full support of the towns. Initially, we had to go around and present, yearly we would go back and give a report. Of course, it would coincide with the new budget year coming up, where we would ask for continued support. But we never had a problem. The towns were great.
They were always interested in their youth and helping them as much as possible, which is a wonderful community. Is there something that I haven't asked you that I should ask you about the Youth Bureau? Yeah, that's always a kicker.
Well, I guess I just like to remember the Youth Service Bureau as being a full-scale agency. Obviously, we were brought in to address needs or gaps in services for kids in crises or kids who were at risk. The longer we were there, though, we were able to recognize that prevention is also a big part of providing services. So we would do prevention programs, and as I said, we would do programs that were really fun programs that would just bring kids and parents out together, and then they would also know we were there if there ever was a need, that there were issues or problems that needed to be addressed. And I always like to think that we provided services to kids who were kind of on the sideline, or some kids who were kind of on the sideline, and maybe there weren't activities that they were involved with prior to this. Our wilderness club met twice a month. They would spend a full day hiking, camping, going out into the wilderness. That happened to be designed for young men. Mm-hmm. Ed Thorney, who resides here in Lakeville, he led that for us for, a number of years, 10, 12 years, and it was very successful. And again, it reached a certain group of kids who otherwise wouldn't have that experience, and that they learned a lot about themselves. They were able to feel success. Mm-hmm. So that's what we did. We sought programs where kids could experience a feeling of success with themselves, have their voices heard, develop self-confidence.
All the good things that you want for your child.
So it was wonderful. It was a wonderful experience for me, and I'm very proud of the work that the Youth Service Bureau did, and I'm really happy it continues. You will interview Nick Pohl, but he was a great second director and has taken the agency to new leaps and bounds.
Wonderful. Thank you so very much.
Thank you, Jean.